You're listening to the Comic Crusaders Podcast. I am your host, Al Mega, CEO of Comic Crusaders and Undercover Capes. In this show, I'm sitting down with creators from all walks of life to talk about inspiration, process, the lessons they've learned, and a whole lot more.
This is your boy, Al Mega. Welcome to a brand new Comic Crusaders Podcast. You know what it is? Today, we got an amazing independent comic book creator. He is a writer. He is a publisher. Bet Box Comics. Wepa! He got a dope campaign on Indiegogo called Artificial. I could say it in Spanish, too, because it's kind of spoiled to say, hey, Artificial number one. And we introduce my man from across the pond, baby. The one, the only, the mildly talented Chris O'Hara. Wepa, how you doing, homie?
That was the best intro I've gotten yet. I didn't even know how to respond. That was great. I'm doing great. Awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, thanks for coming on, brother, to talk about your book, your press, you know what I mean? How you got into this wonderful business, you know, to share the love of creativity. So, Chris, you know, let's get started, my homie.
Yeah.
Let us know where you were originally from and the first thing in fandom that you ever fell in love with.
So I'm from Pennsylvania in the U.S., kind of like Western Pennsylvania on the border of Ohio. That's where the majority of my family is. I moved to Florida when I was super, super young. And so I live kind of Southwest Florida right now. Originally, I'm Irish. So like the majority of my family's from Ireland, which is pretty cool. But so that, you know, I'm just a Florida man. As you know, I try not to.
You wrestle gators, you're trying to tell me.
I could. I have a feeling I could. I've never tried it, but I think I could because it's in the blood, right? You move here and you can just wrestle gators. I try not to stick to that stereotype too much. But so, yeah, I'm just down here in Florida. And as far as like the first, when I got started, or the first thing I fell in love with, I mean, when it comes to pop culture and comics, that was a huge part of my childhood, especially with my dad. He kind of, I'll give you something real fast. My dad sat me down and we watched Aliens, the second one, for the first time when I was two. So not the best time. That was the formative years of learning how to talk. So I picked up some real colorful words. And then like Terminator and Batman Returns, I went and saw that in theaters. So that was just my childhood. It was everything pop culture. When it comes to comics, it was probably Spider-Man. My dad worked at Marvel it's a little cliche. I almost wish it wasn't Spider-Man because it's a little cliche for that young boy loves Spider-Man, but it is just so relatable and it's just accessible. And
yeah, man,
you know, they just nailed down the head.
The big two, as much as people want to talk shit about them at this point in time, they are still the biggest entry point for comic book folk. I mean, listen, indie are unknown IPs, let's be honest. You know, people's entryway is into known IPs. And then, you know, if a shop is smart enough, you know, and that's where they got to get strategic, is, you know, place those indie books side by side to a big two book and let people see, oh shit, this is not Marvel or DC. What's this? You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think it's really rare. Proper placement, but whatever. That's my opinion. We could talk about that later.
No, you're right though. Real quick on it. I got a buddy up in, it's 45 minutes north Punta Gorda. He owns a shop called Reflection Comics. Highly recommend anyone. I mean, you can check it out online, especially if you're local, but I don't know how many people are local that are watching, but he's one of the first people who just had a regular comic book shop and he takes in indie comics and he puts it right next to Spider-Man and X-Men. He's got Artificial number one just sitting there right next to, I think it was a Batman. I can't remember which issue, but it was just cool seeing him put it right there.
Letter wise. Yeah, absolutely. You see, man, alphabetically. Absolutely. You see, that's what I'm saying. That's how you do it. A lot of people separate it and all. And, you know, some people just do a beeline to their section and are out. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, shout out to them for doing that. Fantastic.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So now you growing up, did you happen to have a tribe, you know, in your geekdom?
Not necessarily. So I was kind of a loner as a kid. I was a super fat kid. And I don't know if you remember the early 90s. Bullying was real fun. I don't know, you know, whatever this is kind of conversation, but all I know is I didn't have a lot of friends. So I was kind of a loner of a kid. hung out obviously with my family a lot. My dad, once again, super into comics. So he was kind of how I formed everything. But he had a big walk-in closet full of comic books, all the boxes. I think we went through them once, and like, you know, he had first issues of tons of stuff.
Oh man.
In condition. We racked up like $150,000 worth of comics, and we made it like halfway through his collection. So jeez. So he had been collecting since he was a kid with his dad. So he kind of passed it on. But that was it. I didn't really have much of a tribe. I was kind of a catch-all for anything pop culture. I just liked pretty much anything.
Gotcha. All right. So when did the creative spark start then? Because, you know, you're not surrounded by other than your family. So when did you get into your own head and start, like, making stuff?
I mean, it was my dad. I got a shout-out to my dad. So
you had the most awesome dad. Because my dad didn't want me reading comic books. I'll tell you that much. He wanted me to read hardcore books. One book in particular that I would always pick up. Like, you want me to read a book? Fine, I'm going to read a book. And I found it recently on Amazon, and I had to buy it because of the memories. So this is why I am a goddamn fan of villains. This is the book that I kept reading as a kid.
Rhyme. Okay.
So imagine me reading a cover book all about the history of crime, mafia, killers. This is why I love, look at the back of it. It's a fingerprint. I'm trying to say it. This is the most common fingerprint for a criminal. They even try to tell you in this book that a criminal has a certain style of an earlobe.
That's concerning, but cool.
So this is what I grew up with. Imagine that. So my father wanted me to read hardcover books. No problem. Look at the shit I chose.
That's funny. So you were into the Netflix the murder series before it was
a
thing.
You know what's funny? I haven't caught on to, I mean, if I catch it, I'll start watching. Oh, but, you know, I don't look for them like that. But it was always this. And when I saw this shit, you know, I
that's pretty funny. No, well, he was awesome for the first 7 years of my life. And then, as a lot of these stories turn out, he bailed. So he left.
Wow.
So it is what it is. I'm not, you know, too bent out of shape about it. I kind of forgave him and all that good jazz. I haven't talked to him in forever, you know, probably 20 years at this point. But anyway, so that was the interesting part, is I was just thrown into pop culture. That was my whole childhood. He leaves when I'm like 7 or 8, I think it was. I just stopped doing anything comics. I stopped collecting comics, stopped reading them. I would still watch movies and play video games, and listen to specific music, and I was still into pop culture in that way. But comics dropped off. And as once again, like I said, he worked at Marvel. He was an inker. So like we were kind of integrated into comics when I was young. And I think that was the one thing where I'm like, well, this isn't really part of my life anymore. So I kind of dropped it, which was interesting. But I had always been creative, though. So I would draw like him. I used to draw caricatures when I was little. Like I was 7 years old drawing caricatures of different actors I would see in a movie. Like Sandra Bullock in Demolition Man. I don't know if you ever seen that movie.
Of course. Who hasn't? I'm an old school dude, man.
Perfect.
There was a certain time in my life, it was all about the movie theater.
Yeah. So that's what I would be sitting there watching that and just drawing, you know, Sylvester, you know, all the characters. And it was just fun. But I've always, like I said, been creative. I always used to like to write. So that's kind of just been part of me. And I have to give it to my dad. Because I think it just came from him. Yeah. But it definitely didn't continue through him. I kind of dropped it off, but I picked it back up about a year and a half ago, which is why I'm here now.
A year and a half?
Yeah, that's I dropped so it for long. A while. Why I don't know. So I just
long? What happened? I mean,
I just dropped it. I don't know.
What was it? Did you read a back comic book and you said, oh my God, no?
No, it was literally just my dad left and I stopped caring about comic books. That was just, he was my connection. You know what I mean? And then it was just my mom and I kind of had to grow up really quick. So, you know what I mean? Because my mom was struggling with certain things. And so I had to kind of help raise the family. I had two younger sisters. Anyway, it was that fun story. So I didn't really have a lot of time for all the little things that kids did a ton. We just didn't do it as much.
You had to be an adult right quick on this.
Yeah.
Salute to you, man. And, you know, but look at you now, you know? You know, you had this time period where you were away. Now a year and a half ago you said okay, you got back into the swing of things. What happened a year and a half ago?
Well, like I said, I've always been creative and I've always been kind of like an entrepreneurial type person. So like I've been trying to find different things that I want, different lanes that I want to like build a business or do something creative. I actually went to school to do indie game design. So I made like little mobile games and games on the Xbox and stuff like that. But that didn't really go anywhere. It's the point of entry for indie games is very high unless you know how to do everything. So if you need to have like a programmer and a sound designer and a, you know, everything you need, it's a difficult thing to get a game created. So, you know, props to all the people who do make it happen. But that said, all of my game ideas were always very narrative driven. So they had like a story and they had like a very important point I was trying to, you know, make by the end and things like that. And my buddy, John Schell, who's actually currently like the co-founder of Bentbox Comics, but this is before he became the co-founder, he started making comics. He got into it. He made something called The Last Wand. It's a really cool fantasy comic. He's currently working on The Last Wand 2 now. But he kind of showed me that this is a really cool way to get in, to kind of, you know, the barrier to entry is lower. It's not zero, but it's lower than a lot of other places where you want to kind of tell a story and a narrative. And so it gave me the idea. It was like, I have a notepad full of game ideas that could, quote unquote, easily be turned into a comic book. And so I basically just went through them, found one I was really interested in. And through his guidance, thankfully, you know, that's one of the things I'll give him is that there's another Chris. One of the things I'll give him is that he kind of shepherded me through my first comic, helped me not to fall into some of the pitfalls he fell into. So it was a little more smooth going. But that's when it kind of came back up, was about a year and a half ago. I saw my buddy do it. I said, I'm still needing some kind of outlet. You know what I mean? I needed an outlet to get out creative stuff. I can't just sit at a desk and code because that's kind of what I do right now. So anyway, so that's where it all came out. It was about a year and a half.
Thank you for choosing creativity over anything else.
And whatever pays the bills has kind of been the thing. You know, if it pays the bills, I'll put some numbers on an Excel sheet and we'll be fine for now. Yeah. But it is soul sucking for people that are like creative. And I was like, this
you
is
you don't want to have a falling down moment like Michael Douglas did. You know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah. I don't want that either.
Oh, man. So getting into now the creative side of it, because you were a fan, you know, growing up, reading all these books and whatnot. Was it an easy adjustment to learn how to create now as opposed to being a reader and a fan?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was the first time creating a comic book. And it was really interesting because I've written screenplays before. My wife is a writer and a teacher. And so she kind of helped me write screenplays and stuff, like little TV show pitch ideas and stuff like that. That have always been interesting, kind of fun. So I ended up, I didn't study comic book writing or like the do's and don'ts. I just kind of went with it and tried to figure it out. I normally am, I'm much better off the cuff than I am prepared. Hence for this interview, I just show up and I just talk.
Yeah, that's how I do my joints too, brother. No preparation. Listen, I want to talk to you. This is a chat of two individuals at the booth talking comics. That's how
exactly. And then it becomes more fluid and organic, and it's just better.
Yeah, so, and we can rip our time, and after this, we'll have a beer, and it'll be all good.
There you go. Or a burger, like you said. I'm sorry. Or burger, that's great. Let's go, bro. Earlier. So anyway, I started writing comics like that, almost like a screenplay. So a lot of, people probably would probably hate it, or at least professional comic book writers would probably hate seeing my scripts because a lot of it is like camera angle descriptions. So I'm writing the comic book as if it was like a TV show. That's how I'm writing my comic books because everything's visual and I want the perspective to be accurate to the story I'm telling and basically the scene. So a lot of the writing is basically like point of view behind, or, you know, over right shoulder of main character looking at this character pointing this way. And so I basically just set a scene without like doing a ton of descriptives. And then I have an amazing artist named Gabriel Fonseca from Brazil. He has
a name. Why is that name familiar? He's done some other stuff, right?
This is his first comic.
Really?
So, but I will say
last name. Then
it might be Fonseca is a fairly popular last name. I've actually brought it up to him a couple times. Like, do you know this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy? Okay. It's fairly popular. But this is his first comic, Artificial. He is extremely talented though. And so he was kind of a diamond in the rough. I will say he's popped off. He had like 1,000 followers on some of his socials. Now I think he's almost up to 4,000 or 6,000 or something like that. So ever since coming out with the comic. But he has a magic way of, even with a little bit of language barrier, because he doesn't speak English super fluently, but well enough. But he has a magical way of taking my bite-sized nugget of like this panel idea and just, that's what I told him. I said, you're a professional. You're the guy who has an eye and you're an artist and you have full creative liberty with my comic. And that's what I've told him. So there's been many of times where he's come out with a page and he goes, I added a panel here. I changed this panel a little bit. What do you think? Do you think it's better or not? And I have no pride. So I tell him whatever is the best for the comic ends up in the comic. So whether it's from me or from him, sometimes we veto each other, but it, you know, whatever's best will end up in the comic. Anyway, so yeah, yeah. So as far as like getting used to writing it, I find it very simple to write it when I'm writing it in this style. So I'm just going to continue to do so, but it's been kind of fun writing it. I haven't really found it challenging yet. It's just been fun, you know, trying to get it out.
Well, I know this bad boy, you know, you have Indiegogo as a video and all that stuff. So we've been talking about it. So let me present this on screen, folks, and, you know, take a look for it of it yourselves. Right here, check it out.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Indiegogo for Artificial.
You don't need to show this.
My name is Chris O'Hara. I'm the writer of the series, and I thank you so much for coming and checking it out. I'm really excited to have Artificial on Indiegogo. Hopefully we'll meet a new audience and we'll be able to reach our funding goal and get it out to all you awesome people. The series follows Vincent Van Gogh. I'll just give you a quick little intro, along with two other protagonists who you'll end up meeting later, but it's kind of like a mix of The Evil Dead with like iRobot, and it's just a lot of inspiration from those things helped create this. And I think it's funny and it's timely. It deals with AI and how AI is kind of taking over and the dangers of what that will end up leading to, and how in the future, apparently, the only one who can save us is Vincent Van Gogh. So he's going to have a nice redemption arc, a little bit of a spoiler. So I hope this is the first issue, though. This is kind of the introduction to the series. It's going to be a long series. Hopefully, we have plans for up to eight issues, maybe even more. So with your help backing this issue one, we're going to be able to start creating issue two immediately, and then 3, 4, 5, and keep it going. So once again, thank you so much for going and checking this out. If you can't back it, please share with friends and family, trying to spread the word. That'll help. Anything helps. But if you can back it, that's awesome. And I don't think you'll be disappointed. All right, everybody. Thank you. Stay human.
And there we go, folks. You better stay human. Don't turn into lizard people now. Oh, whatever's going on. So again, check it out, folks. I mean, right now, a salute to those 26 backers that have it at 629. Awesome. So, you know, talk about this, man. Oh, man, look at that cover. Talk about this book. I mean, talk everything, but what is going on here? And wow, I mean, look at this cover and coloring. What is it with Chris's in France? I spoke to another Chris the other day, and he's all about France, too. What is this? What is going on here?
I don't know. this is not my fault. We talked about starting a support group, like you mentioned, just two of us, but it does seem to be a thing. So yeah, no, the color, because you're on it, the coloring for this comic is fantastic. So originally, this is quick for Artificial One, the entirety of the interior was drawn, colored, and lettered by Gabriel Fonseca, just one dude, the guy down in Brazil. He's incredible. For issues 2 and following, we found a designated colorist just to kind of take a little bit of slack off Gabriel, because it is a lot to do a full comic all on your own. So the new colorist, his name is Sergio Martinez. He's from Mexico, and he did the coloring on this special edition cover. So this is kind of a taste of what you're going to get from the series moving forward. But
ooh, look how artsy-fartsy this looks. Holy shit. publicity. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. This is our propaganda edition. So the propaganda edition is a standard edition. However, it's more of a Sin City vibe. If you're familiar with that, you know, black and white with splashes of color. Honestly, it's funny, those don't sell. But if people get the collector's edition, they'll you know, it comes with the propaganda edition. So far, every person has said it's their favorite version, which is just funny because I don't think people understand exactly how well it came out. It's my favorite version too, but
no sé qué es esto, weapon.
Yeah,
it's an the characters here. Oh man, and look at this. So it says you say that you were very visual in your script writing. Would you say that was the same when it came to the characters and how they looked, and how was that creative process with your artist to bring them to life?
That's another one where him and I spent countless hours going over every single detail of this comic book, which has been just a joy, honestly. Each and every time we meet, it's just been fun diving in and making sure every little thing is perfect, you know, perfect. But I kind of, once again, Gabriel, as you can tell, has a very specific style. So it's not your Western comic style, which is what drew me to him, because I was writing this comic book about traditional painters and artists being pulled from the past to fight against AI. So I didn't want it to have that Western feel. I wanted it to feel very as unique as possible. You know what I mean? I didn't want it to be
European feel. I get you, because us Americans, we're not used to that European feel. Thanks to Cinebook, I've had the opportunity to check out a lot of, you know, European style books. Yeah, this fits well within that lane. You wouldn't even think an American or Brazilian did this.
No. But this is his style, though. This is just Gabriel's style. And he's from Brazil. And he works incredibly with like these nice sharp edges, but then still keeping it like fleshed out and kind of rounded. I just love his style. But yeah, this was one of those definitely where I kind of said, hey, here's, you know, some reference photos. Let's see what you come up with. And he came up with these characters with just little descriptions from me and some reference photos.
And they look great. I mean, oh my God. I mean, look at these pages. Look at it. If you don't think this is in pop, oh man, ha ha, ha, I get it. Nice. Yo. I mean, come on, guys. Look at it.
Yeah, and that's his lettering.
I like to see simple things like that.
That's Gabriel, man. He put so much little things into this comic book that just made it better.
Yeah, even how this how the light is supposedly gleaming, you know. Small details that make it look so, you know.
Yeah.
Fuck fire, bro. See,
I'll take it,
bro. Wait, I mean, you were lucky, bro. And you said what? This guy's a monster. This is his first book.
This is his first comic, and it is not lost on me how insanely lucky I am.
Yo.
That's why I treat him like a king. Yo. I don't want him working anywhere else.
Natural reaction, folks. So anytime I do this, I fly off the cuff and everything is all for real. Like I'm seeing it for the first time. So like, yo, I'm like, wow. Wow. Oh man, all right. So we're up top, it's in color, right?
Yeah, so that's your standard. Just the regular edition,
black and white.
Oh, and then I want to give you a little bit of a preview of what the black and white version looks like. That's the propaganda,
bro.
So just little pops of color on specific pages where we want kind of the majority of the focus to land.
But even that black and white look insane.
That looks good. To the point where we said, should we just do a black and white only? It would save us so much on printing.
Well, in the future, you should definitely do maybe another story because, oh my God, look how dope that looks.
It just looks good in black and white. It's so crazy. Ooh. And like once again, those are his. So the lettering is also done by Gabriel. He gives a lot of personality to the lettering, which is just, I love it.
Yeah, and the placement too. He respects the, you know, his art. So
that's the thing that I don't know how many people agree with this, but that's why I kind of like the idea of the main line artist being somewhat involved with the lettering, because you do have that possibility of hitting a snag when you go, okay, here's the line art, put all your effort into it. Oh man, this looks great. Now it goes to lettering and there's no space for the words. Yeah. Yep. So with Gabriel doing both, he was fully like aware of where every piece of lettering would have to go. So he planned it out as he drew, and it just turned into this, you know, for lack of a better word, perfect composition where nothing's lost.
He knows how to use his space.
So well.
Skill. That's an amazing skill. I mean, I look at me. Did he draw you there, Chris? Damn, bro. The likeness is uncanny, bro.
I guess that's flattering. Yeah, that's him.
All right, let's talk about what people be getting me, because folks will start with a standard digital edition for as low as $3, right?
Yep.
Excellent. So these prices are still alive right there on the website that we're showing, right? So because anyone goes and hits that link tree, you don't just get to his socials. You get to even purchase the book.
Sure what? Do.
Made it easy peasy for everyone. One link for all.
Rule them all. Yep.
You know what I mean? And then standard physical edition starting at $8. How many pages for $8 we getting here?
36 total.
Holy shit. 36. Beautiful, bro.
Yeah.
Whole story, huh?
Yeah. So this is just issue one. Issue one is kind of sets the stage for the whole series. So we got a lot more coming, but each issue is going to be around 30 to 36. That's kind of where I'm aiming.
And then look at on this one, you got that collector's bundle for the regular and the propaganda for $15 for you speculators out there. Because the way that this art is looking and the way the story looks like it's going, this is definitely going to be something a lot bigger eventually. I could see this as an animated, you know, because of that type of art.
I can too. And you know what? As much as that's my pie in the sky right now. As much as I don't want to be like, I can't wait for this to be an animated series. To be completely honest, with the amount of love that's going into it, especially with my artists, I was like, I think it could be. And I'm like, I'm trying to keep my brain out of the clouds.
Yeah, no.
A little more grounded.
Manifest, brother. Manifest.
All right, I'll manifest.
A beautiful product. I mean, shit, bro. Go for it. Then we got an enhanced bundle physical. What are we talking about here, enhanced?
So that one is not currently available anymore, mainly because we are already working on issue two, but that was specifically to have your likeness used in Artificial 2.
Oh, cool.
So we had three people back it. I actually wanted to, because I'm going to make that a running theme. So next Kickstarter, we're going to also have it, or Indiegogo. If you don't mind, I wouldn't mind showing, we actually just finished the line art for one of the people who's going to be in it. So I kind of want to show that way people can see the quality that they're going to get.
Screen, you're able to add it onto here, you know, in the share, and then
okay. I
put on screen for you. Don't you worry. Absolutely. You know, we'll get some exclusive. Hey, why not? Hey.
Awesome. So, yeah. No one's seen this yet. So I wanna pull
you're
it up.
Doing that, you know, this is your first comic book, and I will see then also your first crowdfunding campaign.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I did a Kickstarter before this.
Oh, you did?
And okay. Yeah. So this is technically the second chance campaign. So to be completely, you know, transparent. The first one didn't do super well, but it was because I didn't we talked about this before the stream started. I didn't quite understand marketing yet. So I didn't even have a Twitter account before I basically started the comic.
So you had no source. Nobody knew who the fuck Chris O'Hara was or what the hell is this guy selling? Who? And then you have one follower that who the hell is this guy?
Exactly. And then I have a full comic. So like it didn't make a ton of sense. And I am fully taking responsibility for the fact that the first one didn't really do very well. It didn't reach a ton of people. It reached a handful, which was nice, and I was able to fund. But it definitely wasn't enough to obviously make up the money needed to make issue two. Now, I've been in my savings, I've kind of been putting things aside, so I'm still making issue two out of my own pocket. It's going to be the same case to where issue two is going to be done, created, ready to print before Kickstarter, before, you know, the campaign kicks off for the next one. But yeah, I mean, it's stressful doing these Kickstarters and Indiegogos, but it's fun. You know, it is definitely a learning curve, but you know, I think I'm starting to get the hang of it. So hopefully the next campaign does better. So this is a exclusive. Let me know if this will pop up, but if you back, so issue two, we'll do a campaign for that, which will be coming up soon in January. I'm going to run a similar thing, an enhanced edition, if you want to be seen in issue three. So this is the kind of quality you're going to be getting. Let me know when you see it.
Kaboom. Hey, you can control the screen from there. So look at that.
Yep. So this is a little bit of a teaser from issue two, just the line art. We haven't gotten the colors on it yet. But this is a young man who his father actually bought the enhanced edition and asked to put him in it. So here he is.
Oh, shit. Look at that. Dude, that was great.
You haven't seen the picture of him, the reference photo, but once again, Gabriel nailed it. Like, it just looks like him. So anyway, if you're interested in being in the comic in the future, you'll be in the comic and you'll show up pretty cool.
No, shit. Look at that again, folks. Look at that beautiful art. Heck yeah, man. You're killing it because you're killing it with this team, man. So I know, and the video you said that you hope to go about 8 issues, but do you have more than 8 issues in the O'Haraverse?
Yeah, that's going to be the challenge. The challenge is keeping it to 8, because this is another thing. A lot of writers will say they'll have, you know, beginning, middle, and end, and then they'll kind of block out all the individual stepping stones that they want to hit within their story. I've never really been like that, mainly because I've found a lot of times I'll write myself into a corner that I don't want to do, and then I'll have to change things. And that's not a terrible thing, but how I do have a beginning, middle, and end planned, but for all the in-betweens, how they get to the middle and how they get to the end, I'm leaving very fluid. So like issue three is already written as well. We're currently making issue two. Issue three is already written. But issue three, I ended up throwing in a hunting trip for the main group. None of that will make sense right now, but it will make sense at the end of issue two. But it was not planned. It was just, I had an idea. I was planning on hitting this specific beat by the end of issue three. And then I was like, wait, they need a specific way to test something. I can't give away spoilers. And I felt like a hunting trip would be a fun way of doing that and to introduce some different characters. So anyway, that just kind of came up. So I'm really excited about how it turned out, but that's one of the reasons why funneling it into 8 issues might be difficult, depending on where my brain goes. You know what I mean? If I go issue 4, okay, let's hit this beat. And then by the end of it, I'm like, ooh, that sounds more interesting to go this route with it. I tend to kind of just let my creativity run free. I don't know. You know, we'll see how well it turns out. As long as the readers enjoy it.
Let it run, brother. Let it run. Yeah. Let the river wild, baby. That's what you got to do. And so with 2024 coming ahead really quickly at us, so what's the plan for next year? Are you going to be making any Comic-Con appearances? When's the next campaign? What's popping there?
So 2024 is kind of going to be the big year for Bent Box.
Woo! We've announced it. Talk about Bent Box too, man. Is it just more than not official? Talk about it, baby.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we're trying to... I don't do anything small. And this is a contention with me and my wife. But you know what? She already married me. We're good. But yeah. I have a tendency to, when I do something, I dive in, and, you know, I have a kind of that obsessive personality. So when I started making comics, I asked my buddy John Schell if he would like to join under the moniker of Bent Box. And that way Bent Box has more to, you know, share, kind of like the offerings are growing kind of the goal, building a brand. And like, for example, he made this manga, which turned out really good, called Heathen.
Ooh.
But this is a black and white book that just, it turned out so well.
Ooh, look at that, folk. Look at that.
So this one is available. But anyway, we have a ton of things available specifically from myself and John currently. We have Artificial 2 campaigns going to start in January. Plan to hopefully have 3 and 4 done by the end of 2024. So we'll kind of have a nice pace going, is my goal. John is working on the last one too, hopefully 3 and 4 by the end of 2024. So we should have a handful of comics there. He also has 2 more IPs he's working on, one called Wingless that everyone should keep an eye out for. And then another one that I think is a little more secretive. And then I actually have I have 2 more IPs that I'm working on as well that hopefully will be coming out in 2024. One called Sundown, which is like a psychological thriller. And the other one called Bury Me in Dixie, which is kind of like comedic Doctor Who-esque thing, but with like a Southern gangster vibe. I haven't worked on my pitch yet, but that's kind of the gist.
So the energy, brother, Chris, every time you're talking about this stuff, and the next thing you're working on, you say it with a big smile. So, you know, how excited are you to, you know, just be in it, man?
Well, that's the thing, is this is where I get a lot of my energy from. I get pumped about doing creative things. So like, once again, we were talking about data analytics and stuff that I do day to day. That's just soul suck. You know, I'm not pumped by the end of the day,
but brother.
Yeah. But the second my artist says, hey, I got a new page to show you, I am electrified.
That's your Red Bull, baby. Right.
That's my Red Bull.
That email. Whoever. Love it.
Oh, I'm so excited. And then to finish out that 2024 thought, we kind of just started 2022 at the end of 2022, have been slowly working 2023 to kind of just getting our footing. And once again, 2024, we're kind of going to be our year, you know, hopefully. So we're hitting up 5 cons in 2024. So first one's in January. We have 3 in March, which is a bit of a oof, but they're just the ones that are available. And then a big one called Infinity Con up in Tallahassee, Florida in, I believe, July. So that's kind of going to...
Not going to do the MegaCon in Central?
We weren't able to get in time for 2024. They were already booked. Trust me, I saw it and I was like, please, please and thank you. Can I come? But it said already booked. I was like, dang.
That's a good show. Jump next year. I was able to attend 2 years in a row. And, you know, being Comic Crusaders, you know, I like to ask everybody, like, yo, you know, off the record, how's the show treating you? Are you doing well? And I'll tell you that I'll say at least 97%, to be honest, were like, great fucking show. I made my money back on day one.
All right.
You know, so, you know, when you hear that type of language, it's exciting because I want creators to have, listen, when they make their money, you guys make your money back, on one day, you have nothing but fun the next few days. And it really shows in how you express the energy with the fans. Because, like, yo, easy peasy, my shit's paid off. The rest is all profit. I mean, happiness, right?
Yeah, that's happiness right there. Yeah, I mean, hey, 2025, we'll be at MegaCon. That's the plan. But just couldn't get in 2024. But we're going to be around all over Florida. So if any of your watchers are local, hit up almost any Comic-Con coming to Florida in 2024, and we'll be there.
And not just Comic-Con, but of course, if they want to stay tuned up today, they got to follow you on the podcast circuit as you're talking about not just, you know, your amazing project in Artificial, but the whole family in the Bedbox Comics universe. So yes, I really can't wait to see, you know, watching you coming. I can't wait to see you boothing, you know, because I want to be traveling eventually to some of these cons. And hopefully it'll be one that you're at. We'll hang out, have a beer.
Yeah.
You know, do some new webpots. I'm going to the booth and sell some books. All right, bro?
Okay, yeah.
That's what we're going to do. So, Miente, you know what it is? All the links are, his link, not all the links, but all the links are in that one link. The one link to them all, as he says. Wherever, right there at the link tree, Bent Box Comics. All right, link is below. Then follow everything, and not just that. It is the holidays, right? So for your comic book fan, this is a wonderful gift. And you already saw how beautiful the art is. And the story is just as hot, baby. That's right. It's an amazing creative team. And again, this is something different for the comic book fan in your life. So you listen, put this in their stocking at a great price point too. You know what? Do that duo special right there. You know what I mean? They'll love it. Appreciate it. Want to hang, want to read, or both to just put away. But no, they should read it because they're going to love it, all right? And with that, hopefully we can meet Chris and the other Chris at the Chris is a friend's support for you.
Yep.
Just kidding. But with that, thank you again, Chris, for your time. Mi gente, thank you for tuning in and hanging out. Hasta la próxima. The auto tells you what to do. You know what it is. Wepa, baby. Later.
Thank you for listening to the Comic Crusaders podcast. If you like the content, please subscribe and turn on notifications. Also, please visit ComicCrusaders.com and our extended podcast family over at UndercoverCapes.com. And also, make sure to download the Comic Crusaders app on the Google Play Store today.